Sex, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the speculative interdimensional vehicle, Sex in Space. Its mission, to explore new points of view, to seek out fresh opinions, to boldly go where so many have gone before, and still somehow manage to totally miss the point. Subscribe to Sex in Space, wherever quality podcasts are found.
Welcome, Trish. Thank you so much for being with us today. So we're here for another episode of the Sex in Space podcast. We have Trish here. Trish started her nursing journey after her own lived experience with substances, mental health, homelessness, and feeling a loss of connection and support. She felt passionate about building awareness, dialogue, inclusion, and advocacy for individuals within targeted communities, and has since worked in harm reduction, crisis intervention, care coordination, public health, inpatient, community, forensics, corrections, sexual assault response, outreach, and culturally specific nursing areas, providing services for individuals living with mental illness, substance use, trauma, and or a variety of additional psychosocial stresses. So highly, highly qualified and highly, highly, highly interesting. And Trish recently moved here from Canada, which is very cool, and is a registered psychiatric nurse with a Bachelor of Science degree in psychiatric nursing. Trish also volunteers on Tuesday afternoons with Auckland Drug Information Outreach and was awarded Registered Psychiatric Nurse of the Year in 2013 and received a Nursing Award of Excellence in Nursing Advocacy in 2021. She has a 28-year-old son, Oliver, who is her favourite human. He lives in Canada and is the coolest. And Trish likes music and friends and talking about drugs, which we love. And we're super excited to be talking with her today. We're going to be focusing on the New Zealand Needle Exchange Programme. So welcome, Trish. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And you know what? I should have updated that bio because recently I've moved from volunteering at the ADIO, the Auckland Drug Information Outreach, to being the National Harm Reduction and Hep C Lead for Aotearoa, so all of the needle exchanges. But I am based out of the East Street location in Tamaki Makaurau.
Amazing. So thank you so much for giving us your time today to talk more. And I think that what you said about like talking about drugs, I think that's awesome. And I think that's a really great sort of jumping off point for us. So can you tell us a bit about what kinds of responses you get when you have those kinds of conversations with people?
Oh, I get all kinds of responses. So often I think what I get and I say we, because we as a society all experience this, because we've been raised in societies and spaces that kind of believe that in order to be successful and use drugs, you have to be abstinent or work towards abstinence. So a lot of people, in my experience during Korero, will refer to recovery as abstinence. And so the only way that you're recovered is if you don't use. But you can actually live a stable life that you enjoy and use substances. So there's lots of korero. Sometimes people are a little bit resistant or say your thoughts are a little bit progressive or good luck with those kind of perspectives. But really, when I hear that, often I'll say, what is the difference between alcohol, caffeine, and any other drug? And really, if you look at drugs and the history of drug use and the history of prohibition and abstinence, every drug at some point has been legal or illegal. So the only reason we look at certain drugs today that are illegal, like why is that and what is the legislation behind that and what prompted that change? And it's really interesting. So it's kind of a mix of looking into how colonialization and like the temperance movement has changed society's perspective of different drugs. And what's interesting to me is how we still, even though we know alcohol can cause significant harms, and statistically, it causes the most harms. We still use it to celebrate in our society. We use it socially. We use it. It's the punchline of many like cute jokes or cute merch that you can buy anywhere. But if you replaced like cooking with wine apron with cooking with meth, people would suddenly become shocked and appalled. But really, drugs are drugs.
That's such a good point that it's, you know, you can, it's how we approach different drugs, even though I guess, you know, they're not like maybe on the spectrum is not, maybe not the right word, but they are all drugs. And it's how we approach them as a society and what we perceive about them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And coming to the Needle Exchange Program, for any of our listeners who maybe don't know what that is, could you unpack that a little bit for them?
HIV was spreading, and one of the ways that it was spreading was through injection or sharing injection equipment. And so New Zealand is the first country in the world to create a state sanctioned national needle exchange space so that people could access sterile equipment. So that was, I believe, 1987 or 1988, first country in the world to legalize that. And so at the time, because of moral panic or society's kind of views on giving people sterile equipment, it initially started as an exchange. So that's why it was called a needle exchange and still remains that to this day. Because the idea behind it was if folks came in for 10 needles and syringes, they had to return 10 needles and syringes. It's my understanding that that was because the public were kind of reluctant to imagine us giving out sterile equipment and what would be the harms to the community if people left their used syringes on the street or in garbage cans or whatever. So that's how it started. Mm-hmm. Research has indicated that there was actually more harms associated with actually the exchange part because it kind of restricts people and creates a barrier. But most people, when they came for supply, they would just return the used equipment. So there's research globally that indicates that an exchange process isn't necessary really for folks to return things. So in New Zealand, it's my understanding we have 20 needle exchanges, but we also have a number of pharmacies across the country that offer sterile equipment in their pharmacies.
Okay, amazing.
One more thing that the needle exchanges offer across the Motu is Hep C testing, sterile equipment. Some of the needle exchanges also have like mobile services and the vending machines, which are 24/7. Yeah, that's it. So what my role is National Harm Reduction and Hep C Lead. Basically, all that means is that my role is mostly to offer support to the kaimahi, the staff, and offer education, support, but really work collaboratively with the folks that work at the needle exchanges, who are really the experts. We're a peer-led, peer-founded, and peer-based service, so learn from them, and then whatever I have learned that I can add is how I kind of engage with folks, yeah. And a lot of stuff about like advocacy, networking, expanding opportunities for folks to get better services who do inject. So maybe offering education to different healthcare services or offering education to different stakeholders. That's kind of my role too.
And so you mentioned harm reduction, and maybe some of our listeners, if they're not familiar with the term, could you sort of unpack with them as well what that looks like or what that means?
Okay, well, harm reduction is my favorite thing in the world. And basically, we all use harm reduction. Generally speaking, we all use harm reduction if we care about someone. Because when you care about someone and they're having drinks out with friends, you're like, hey, how can I get you home? Can I get you an Uber? That's harm reduction. Can you give me your keys for the night? That's harm reduction. Dude, I think you've had a little too much to drink. Can I put you to bed with a glass of water and a paracetamol? That's harm reduction. So we kind of already do that. When we ride a bicycle, we wear a helmet. When we drive a car, we wear a seatbelt. When you go skydiving, you have a parachute. Mm. These are all basically things that we do every day in our life that reduce harm. Mm. So harm reduction initially kind of was coined, I believe, in drug using spaces, and it was to reduce the harms associated with drug use.
The analogies are really helpful to understand
yeah.
what it looks like and what you're trying to achieve with it.
Exactly. Well, yeah. anything we do that we do in our basic lives, which is part of the human condition, whether it be sex or drugs or basic activities or fun things, all have an element of risk. Mm. And what we could all do is just stay at home and stay on our couch, but that's not realistic. Mm. So the reality is if people are going to use substances, there may be harms. Now, harm reduction is the philosophy that you create relationships, you offer education, you offer equipment, you offer support so that people, if they are going to use, they're going to do it in a more safe way. Mm-hmm. So reducing transmission of Hep C or HIV, reducing wounds or abscesses, reducing infection, reducing financial harms or mental health harms by offering safer supply. Mm-hmm. These are all ways that we can reduce the harms associated with drugs. What is interesting about drug use is that currently, if you look at the drug policy that exists and the way that we criminalize folks for using drugs and the way that our society perceives people that use drugs and treats people that use drugs, those are the actual things that are causing the most harms, more so than the drugs themselves. Like, I could use meth right now and it's not going to cause me any harm talking to you, but the way that we have criminalization, I could get criminalized. Suddenly now I'm in an incarcerated facility. I may lose opportunity for employment. I may get additionally stigmatized, or I'm scared to use that around any people because I don't want to get reported or caught. Mm-hmm. So now I'm using in isolation, which is one of the hugest risks. Because if you have an overdose by yourself, who's going to support you? So a lot of the things we do and a lot of the ways that we treat people who use substances actually do the most harm.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to harm reduction in the context of using drugs, what have you found there to be any misconceptions around people kind of getting the wrong idea about what harm reduction is or looks like?
Yeah, so my first introduction to that actually was probably in about 2011 when I was telling some nurse friends or nurse colleagues that I worked in harm reduction, and they were like, oh, so you're an enabler. And they were like, you're giving people syringes so that they'll use more. Now, I don't know if you'll remember the 90s when condoms were going to be supplied in schools, and there was this outrage that now kids were going to have sex because there was condoms. But the reality is young adults were having sex anyways. Now we've given them condoms to reduce the spread of infection. So it's the same premise behind offering people sterile equipment. Mm-hmm. Like if I gave you a lighter right now, you're not going to take up smoking, you know?
That's so we're a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, enabler. And now it's funny because over different conversations I've had in the years, I've learned from other folks working in this space. And now when people call me an enabler, I'm like, thanks, because I help to enable people to live and survive and to survive with happiness and have the best quality of life they can. So, heck, I don't mind being called an enabler now. Yeah. But another misperception that I've recognized or observed is that folks think that harm reduction actually means reducing how much people are using, but it actually has nothing to do with that. Folks are welcome, of course. The one thing about harm reduction is it doesn't condone or condemn drug use. It's just simply a non-judgmental relationship building opportunity for folks to access education, connection, support, really, at the end of the day. So it has nothing to do with reducing how much you're using.
And when you're having those conversations with people, if they're initially like maybe not on board or not quite understanding, when you have those conversations, do you find people come out of it and go, oh, I understand now, I understand what harm reduction is trying to achieve?
Sometimes I think that it's interesting because much like growing up in colonial systems, colonialism is pervasive through everything we do. It's in our media, it's in our healthcare system, it's in our law enforcement systems, it's in everything. So unless you're constantly working at being aware of it or recognizing it or even looking for it, you don't really notice where it exists. So because of that, because we've been embedded in thinking that people that do drugs are bad, or certain drugs are bad, certain drugs are worse than others, certain drugs you'll get addicted instantly. Because we've been raised with a lot of that, korero, it's really hard to change people's perceptions in one conversation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes years of conversations. But I do find it really interesting when people will walk away being like, never thought of that. Mm. But yeah, it's hard because we're just so ingrained.
Yeah, it's so, when we grow up, we're raised by culture, you know, so it's really hard to kind of unpick those things that you've been really unconsciously taking on board your whole life.
Totally. Like when you've been raised your whole life to think that someone who uses meth and might be on the street and appears unhoused has made those choices and that's why they're there, it's really hard to realize that this is a human being. There's lots of reasons why people use substances, from it's fun to it's escape to it helps me be creative to it's a celebration. And it's hard for us to kind of wrap our head around thinking of drugs in non-hierarchical ways. Mm. So I always, often when there's a bit of a struggle or someone's like, oh, I don't really agree with you, I'll be like, well, let's just replace all the words with alcohol. Mm. And often people will be like, oh yeah, right. Because when you think of it, we talk about supervised consumption sites for injecting, and people are like, oh, there shouldn't be supervised injection sites. There's so many quote unquote unruly people outside. Well, what is the difference between a supervised and consumption site for injecting equipment or a bar, which is a supervised and consumption site for alcohol? And yeah, there's quote unquote unruly people outside the bar too, you know?
Yeah.
But for some reason we're like, oh, we're okay with that.
It's so fascinating, this really like internalized, like you say, hierarchy of different drugs and what we society deems as acceptable, kind of acceptable, and then not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, once you really kind of start to take it out and you go, oh yeah, actually, you know, no one gave me a list and said, this is how it is. But all those things just kind of come in from culture.
Totally. And then even when you think of how drugs are consumed, we have an hierarchy. Like if you're drinking alcohol or drinking caffeine, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're smoking a cigarette or smoking cannabis, that's perceived in a different way. Mm. If you're injecting, that's perceived even differently. Mm. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah,
it's a really complicated issue.
It is. And especially because it's so ingrained in us, then it makes it even harder to kind of get in there and undo that when it's come in here from years and years and years of living as a human.
Yeah, totally.
And being surrounded by media and everything else that gives us those messages.
100%. And like media really is responsible. And the way that our education is built around substance use is really responsible, because I don't know about you, but how many times have you heard things like cannabis is the gateway drug and all this kind of fear mongering stuff. Mm. But if you look at even indigenous communities and plant medicines and how those were used, that was like used to create community and spirituality and traditional practice and relationship and celebration. Mm. And now we've kind of turned a lot of that into how it's so harmful because it's illegal.
It's really highlighting for me how powerful culture is, in terms of you have this one thing which doesn't necessarily have any meaning in and of itself, and then one group can give it this meaning and one group can give it a completely different meaning, and it just has two completely different experiences.
I know. And it's wild because for me, I always find it kind of fascinating because obviously I've done the journey myself. I was raised in a very absent-minded, abstinent-focused Christian household where it was like, no, you don't put any of that in your body. Mm. It's a sin. And somewhere over the years, I've been honored actually, to work in spaces where people use drugs and have felt safe to have conversations with me and my own lived experience. And now I can see other perspectives and see how far all of these experiences have helped me change my mindset. Mm. But I do find it fascinating that for some reason, humanity in general has put such significance on how people choose to consume something, whether it's drugs, or to have sex, when all of us use drugs and all of us have sex. Like, every single one of us. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, there might be like a small, tiny amount of people that don't.
Yeah.
But
the large majority in some form.
Yeah.
Or other.
Our whole culture is built around caffeine starting our day. Our whole culture is around alcohol, being a celebrant. Mm. Our whole culture, well, our whole society is built on having sex. That's how we procreate. Mm. Or that's how we have life, enjoy life, have relationships. Yeah. But yet, for some reason, we just get all up in ourselves about both of those activities.
Well, yeah, no, it's so hard. Society makes it so hard to talk about those two things, which arguably are the two most likely things that we'll have in common with someone else.
Yeah, that's true.
Blows my mind sometimes. I'm like, this is crazy.
I know.
And in terms of the work that you do, what do you find most rewarding about it?
Well, it's been life-changing for me. Selfishly, it's really helped me negotiate my own feelings of shame and self-stigma around drug use, and kind of forgiven myself and build some esteem and self-confidence, because you're taught that if you use drugs and you become unhoused, you're a bad person. So there's a lot of shame associated with that. So that has been rewarding. But what's also been rewarding is just the relationships that I get to be a part of, because a lot of folks that use substances have been mistreated by so many intersections of the world, and often find that in order to kind of survive, they either have to like isolate, or they have to put walls up, or they have to maybe even act out in different bigger gestures of emotions to kind of keep people from getting to know them and keep people from getting close. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really honored to be able to get to know people, sometimes at a really personal level, because we have a space that we can talk openly about drugs without feeling shit about it. So yeah, some of the best relationships that I still keep in touch with were some of the folks that I met in injecting clinics in Canada, and still keep in touch.
That's so special.
Yeah, and to be fair, when I worked in those injecting clinics, it was very infrequent that we even talked about their actual drug use while they were injecting. Mm. Most of the time we were talking about our favorite music, cool cars, gossip on the streets, whatever was happening, you know, like interesting things that we all talk about. That's how friendships are made.
Yeah. Connecting with people.
Yeah, totally. So it was really cool.
And to anyone who maybe is hesitant to access those kinds of services, how do you build trust there?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Building trust is a lot around building consistency, like being consistent, being about relationship first, And getting to know the person on a human level, rather than kind of identifying them or labeling them as the substance they're using, which is another thing that we do terribly in this world. So we really try to strive away from using labels, or, and really it's just kind of a relational corero that happens at the front counter.
Yeah.
Come on in. But what is, but I think we do have leaps to go still, because it's my understanding that a lot of folks, a significant and remarkable amount of folks that access the needle exchanges prefer to access the vending machines. They're, I mean, one thing is they're available 24/7, and the needle exchanges in this country just can't stay open that long. So we're only open different operational hours, so limited. But also, I have talked to a number of folks that have come in to see me about like helping with vein care and stuff, and they've actually shared with me that because of self-shame and because of stigma, they kind of didn't really want to acknowledge that they used or to have anyone publicly know that they used. And so coming into the space and talking to someone just made them a little bit apprehensive. So they chose to use or to get their supply through the vending machine. Now, all that says to me is that it's not even necessarily the staff at the needle exchanges. It's that society has built this way of being that shames people so badly or makes them have to isolate. So obviously we've been punitive in some way or coercive in some way, or if someone mentions drugs, we immediately go to, oh, so when are you going to quit? Or how are you going to like reduce your use? And sometimes people don't want to hear that. So they get to avoid all of that kind of discourse if they go to the vending machine.
So to the average person like myself or someone listening to this podcast, what advice would you give to how we can help reduce some of that stigma that is associated there?
I love that question. Okay. So much like sex, we don't really talk about sex. And so there's this like taboo about sex, but really everyone's having it. So just like drugs, just start talking about drugs, 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 drugs all the time. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit more enthusiastic about that because I get to do that as part of my job. And then I do it all evening and on weekends, talk about drugs, 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 because it's my favorite topic. But I highly encourage it, because you'll find at first that when you start talking about drugs, like over a, I don't know, over a coffee in a coffee shop, you might feel a little awkward at first and weird that you're just openly talking about your own drug use. But over time, you'll start recognizing where that's coming from in your body. And a lot of times that is your own self-shame or your own self-stigma or your own perceptions about how other people look, and you don't feel that you associate with that person. But we're all humans, and we're all in this world together. So we are all the same. So just talking about drugs nonstop will definitely help you feel a little bit more comfortable about it. I'm currently wearing a shirt that says "Nice people take drugs."
I was going to ask you about that, yeah, for our listeners.
And it's so funny because when I first got this shirt and wore it, to be completely transparent, I was like, oh no, I feel so awkward. I feel exposed. I feel like people are going to ask me. I don't know if I'm ready for these personal questions. But really, we all use drugs. And another way of like kind of reducing that is that each of us as individuals can do is by just starting to call caffeine drugs or your vape drugs or your cocktail drugs, because it is, or your prescription drugs, drugs.
And is there a way that listeners can access a shirt like yours?
Oh, well, yes, there is a way. You can go to a Instagram page. Yep, 64 shirts. 64 shirts on Instagram. It's a small clinic in Canada that makes these shirts, but also just start making your own. Make them for yourself and all your friends. There's lots of t-shirt making places, and that's how we started, actually.
Cool. Cool. So to all the listeners out there, you can go, I think AS Color will probably do that. Get your own, shirts with your own slogan on them and go out for a coffee and talk about drugs with your friends.
I think it's such an
accessible way to do some of that work, because it's just part of an everyday conversation.
And you know what I'd like to urge people to, your listeners, is that when you do pass by someone on the street that may appear like they are on a substance or appear like they are experiencing mental health, please just get to know them, smile, greet people, make eye contact, because that could be you. And it definitely is someone's loved one, brother, sister, aunt, parent, cousin. Yeah, so just reaching out and getting to know. And I swear to God, if you get to know the people in your neighborhood, it's such a rewarding experience to be able to recognize those friendly faces and build relationships with the people in your community. You get to know more about them. They get to know more about you. Mm. And I don't know, it just makes for a better day. Like, what I love is once I get to know people in my community, literally you walk down the street and you get about 7 hugs from one end of the street to the end. Or I don't know how many, hello, hi, I love your shirt, I love your glasses, whatever. And like, how great is that to have reciprocal appreciation anywhere you walk through your neighborhood?
And I think I read somewhere that humans should be receiving 6 hugs a day for health. So you're meeting your health requirements as a human.
Okay, well then all the listeners need to up their health quotas too.
Yeah. Get to know people in your neighborhood and go and give them a hug.
With consent. Yes. Permission first. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. It was lovely to chat with you.
Thank you.
We really hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to find out more about the New Zealand Needle Exchange program, you can check them out at nznep.org.nz. Just before we sign off, we wanted to remind you about our 2 books that we have available, How to Talk with Your Kids About Porn and The Organ Education Forgot. These are both available as downloadable PDFs or in print, and you can head on over to sexandspace.com to grab your copy. If you do, you'll be educating yourself about a very important subject and also supporting us and the work that we do. And if you'd like to support us in other ways, we'd love for you to buy some merch, which is also available from our website. We've got mugs and t-shirts. As always, thank you so much for listening and being on this journey with us. Until next time, safe travels and see you on the next episode.